life is full of difficult stuff, and we all have our different difficult stuff to deal with. But at the end of the day, the only thing we have control over is how we respond. And that can make the difference between, I don't know, feeling pain and then being in great suffering. And so this is never a judgment. This is never saying, oh my goodness, you didn't respond correctly and therefore you're a bad person. That's never like that. But it's about the growth and what can we do?
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. So my guest today is Alexandra Walker. Alexandra is a life coach, author, and a musician. A former senior civil servant and charity leader, she has overcome long-standing emotional abuse. Now through her new business, Damsel Not in Distress, and her recently published book, Reclaiming Christmas, her mission is to help as many people as possible to transform their lives and walk their personal path to peace, freedom, and purpose. Now here's our interview with Alexandra. Well, welcome Alexandra to My Movie Story. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. It's lovely to be here, Brian.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for joining us all the way from Scotland, I believe. Is that right?
That's right. It is
Yeah.
very windy here today. I can
Yeah.
hear it buffeting the window right next to me. So yeah, it's full on winter conditions here at the minute.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. And me being in Melbourne, where it's summer, we've had some really hot weather lately, but typical Melbourne bushfires, storms, rain, you name it. But that's Scotland I'm familiar with because my parents are from there and around the Glasgow area. Which part of Scotland do you live in, Alexandra?
So my husband and I are on the northwest coast, so
Beautiful.
just near a little village called Plockton, and we were walking in the snow just at the weekend up on the
Oh,
hills,
nice.
so that was really beautiful.
Fantastic. Yeah. And but obviously your English accent tells me you're from England originally. So, what part of England are you from? And then, when did you move to Scotland?
Yeah, well, I've lived in a load of different places. I was born actually right on the border between England and Scotland, and my father was Scottish and my mother was English. So I'm like this weird hybrid in a way, and spent my childhood in England, went to university in Scotland where I met my lovely husband Simon, which is actually the same university that Prince William and Kate went to,
Ah,
so
there you go.
St Andrews. So that was fun. And then we lived for about 15 years in London and kind of pursued professional careers for all that time. And then recently decided we were going to do a bit of a change of pace and come up
Yeah.
here.
Very much a change of pace, yeah. So with the little
Yeah.
village that you live near, has that sort of got most of what you need, or do you need to take trips into one of the cities for things, or?
You have to be quite planned about what you need. So yes, there are a couple of shops, but there isn't really like a proper food shop that close by. So you do have to just plan things. And I have to say online deliveries are a bit of a lifesaver. But again,
Yeah.
they don't come straight away. It's not like you get your stuff the next day or anything. So
Right.
yeah, a bit of
Yeah.
planning, but it's worth it to live in a beautiful place.
Oh,
So
for sure. For sure. Yeah. Oh, sounds really nice. Yeah. And there's a lot of Scotland I still haven't discovered yet. But yeah, I'd love to get back there. I've been there twice myself as my parents are from there. And they try to go back every 4 or 5 years as well. And most of my cousins are over there. So if they're watching, hi, Brian and Marie and Duncan in around the Glasgow area. Hope you enjoy the show. And you're a coach as well. We were chatting just before about your coaching and you've written a book as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
yeah, so basically my career before this was I worked in the civil service, that's kind of supporting the government basically in the UK, and also in charity. So I did a whole bunch of different roles and leading teams and that kind of thing, and coaching was always a big part of that for me because I always really cared about the people who were working in my teams and everything. But I've now taken a bigger step to decide that actually coaching is what I want to do for my career. So I've set up my new business, Damsel Not in Distress,
Great
which,
name, by
yes, and
the
people sometimes miss out the not, and then they suddenly like come back and say, not in distress, not in distress, you know.
way. Yeah.
The story behind it is that I is really my life story, which I spent quite a lot of that time in London when I was quite ostensibly successful in my career, but I was internally miserable and like really unwell in a bunch of different ways. And this will come out in some of the films that we talk about. And it took me a long time to understand that the relationship I'd had with my father wasn't quite what it should have been. And there was effectively there was emotional abuse there, which had started at a very young age. And so it had kind of done things to how I see the world from when I was, very young. And that was why I didn't really get it. Like there was a part of my brain that got it and knew that I didn't like what was going on, but there was a whole other part of me that just denied that there was a problem because that's kind of what you do. But eventually I figured it out. And so that's kind of the backstory. It's how you kind of reclaim things and recover and really grow into the life that you're meant to have after things like that, which is what I'm all about. And the book's called Reclaiming Christmas. And this was, I suppose, my first foray into trying to explain my story in a way that I could get at the time, which was basically that my father's behavior used to be particularly bad at Christmas. So in the run-up to every Christmas, he would do something really difficult. And my mom and I were trying to enjoy it. And then the whole mood was affected by that. And of course, I would try to make it a success because my mother loved Christmas and she just wanted it to be successful. But eventually what happened was it just became toxic. Like I didn't want to do Christmas anymore because I had, when you have that many negative associations, you get to the point where you're like, I just don't want to do this. So there came a point where I just didn't do Christmas at all. And my husband and I had no decorations, no presents, no nothing. I just didn't want to do it. And then the next year, I said to him, hang on a minute, but I don't want this to be the rest of my life. I don't want to just ignore something that I actually love because of what happened in the past. So the book is all about my active experiment to reclaim Christmas as my own and the different ways I did that to kind of bring it back to life for myself again.
Fantastic, and really brave of you to, let your experience help people in a positive way, and with the coaching and the book, and for anyone interested in checking out Alexandra's book, we'll share the link below the show here. She also narrates the audio version of the book, which I'm listening to at the moment, and it's lovely narration. So that definitely worth, if you like an audio book and you're short for time and you can't always sit down and read, have a listen to that. It's a great read. It's a great story. So yeah, and with the title of your business, Damsel in Distress, that has a bit of a movie flavor to it. So I can
Yeah.
tell you love movies, which is what's brought you here today as well. And I'm sure we'll hear more, a bit more about your life and your journey in that throughout these three films. And you've chosen three really diverse films. They're all well known, they're all real favorites. Going back to sort of the early 2000s and that. And it's always interesting. Every guest has a sort of different films and a different take on these films. And one of your films in particular is also one of my favorites as well, which I'm really looking forward to talking to you about. So let's kick it off with your all-time favorite movie. And without me saying anything about it, I'll let you introduce that film, tell us what it's called. And yeah, we'll start from there. What makes this one of your all-time favorite movies?
Yeah, so my all-time favorite movie is
Shrek. Thank you very much. I'm here till Thursday.
Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, Cameron Diaz, John Lithgow.
You love this woman, don't you?
Yes.
You want to hold her?
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Then you got the title, little tenderness.
Shrek.
Wow. Let's do that again.
No.
And the funny thing is, it makes me smile even just saying the name of the film. It just because it evokes everything about it that I love. And
Absolutely.
the really funny thing is, I cannot remember when I first saw it. I don't know. It must have been when it first came out, but I don't think it was at the cinema. I was at university at the time, so I don't know. But I think my husband and I watched it together, and it's a fairy tale, so it's kind of linked to my business, Damsel Not in Distress. And there is a princess called Princess Fiona in the film who absolutely ends up as the damsel not in distress. But it kind of turns the traditional story of the princess getting rescued and everything kind of on its head in a number of different ways. And I just love the characters. They are so memorable, and I think In particular, I forget a lot of films I watch. I don't know whether you do this. There are whole films that I know I've seen, but I couldn't tell you anything about them. This
Yeah.
one, I basically remember the whole thing. So
Yeah.
that's a sign of a good
It
film to me.
really is a classic, isn't it? Yeah. And I guess some of our younger listeners may not have seen Shrek because unfortunately it's one of those animated films that hasn't really grown with more and more generations. Like my daughters don't really know Shrek. They don't ask to watch it. It doesn't sort of leap out of them as much as like say the Toy Story films. But needless to say, I mean it was still a landmark film in animation, you know, when animated films were still sort of becoming a thing, you know, around 2001. And little trivia fact you may or may not know, or our listeners may or may not know, Shrek was the first film to win the best animated film at the Oscars. So that was the first year they brought that category into the Oscars, and Shrek was the first animated film to win that award. And now they've had that award every year since, obviously. Yeah. So to quickly take us through the world of Shrek, you know, like what is Shrek really about? You know, because there's kind of a lot going on there, isn't there? Like with all these different fairy tale characters and different pop culture references and stuff. So yeah, if you were to sell it to someone who'd never seen it, how would you describe Shrek?
I mean, so as I say, it turns your classic fairy tale of the princess in the castle being rescued from the dragon by her prince, you know, and they kiss and it's true love and all that. It just turns it on its head. And I think what I particularly love about it is all the characters are just so memorable. So effectively, what happens is there's this Lord Farquaad who is very short and very pompous. And he wants a beautiful princess to marry, and but he doesn't want to go to the trouble of actually having to go and get her himself because he can't be bothered, and he thinks someone else should do that for him. And through various circumstances, Shrek ends up being given the task, and Shrek is an ogre. And the funny thing about the film that I particularly love is I see bits of myself in a lot of the main characters. So Shrek, he's a Scottish ogre, so I love the fact that he's Scottish. But he's an introvert, right? He lives in his swamp. Other people wouldn't necessarily want to be in that swamp, but it's his swamp and he loves it. And suddenly, because of events that happen in the film, all these fairy tale creatures are in his swamp and he's being invaded, basically. He's like, I don't want this. I need my peace.
That's
And
right.
I really get that about him. And the other character is Donkey. So Donkey is
Classic.
just probably the funniest character in an animated film that I've ever come across.
Oh, for
And
sure.
he's just, and the thing about a donkey, he never stops talking. I mean, you literally can't shut that donkey up. And that's not so much like me, although my husband might sometimes disagree with me on that. But what I love about a donkey is he is so faithful and so persistent. He sees something in Shrek and he's just like, I'm going to stick with this ogre, even though he doesn't want me. And he said multiple times that he doesn't want me. I'm going to stick with him anyway. And one of the bits I particularly love with Donkey is his attitude to fear. So he's actually quite a scared little donkey, you know. And when it comes to the point where they're coming to the castle to get the princess, they have to cross this crazy rickety bridge. And I just love it. Donkey's kind of going across it and going, I'm looking down, I'm looking down, which is precisely what Shrek had told him not to do. That's me in a nutshell. That's what I do. I look down and I get a bit freaked out. And then Shrek basically cajoles him to the other side. And he doesn't realize that's what's happening. And then suddenly he's made it to the other side. And he just looks down and goes, cool, and skips off, you know. And I
That's it.
just, it's he is such a beautiful character. But what's the theme that I love is that Shrek and Donkey actually become really close friends, and they're an unlikely couple, if you
Oh,
like.
absolutely.
And yet, you know, they get on incredibly well. And then, of course, finally, you've got Princess Fiona, who is expect she's had this spell put on her, and she is expecting to be rescued by her prince, and then everything is going to be fine, and the spell will be broken, and her life will be perfect. And then she's rescued by Shrek, and she's a bit unsure what to make of it. She's like, "Well, you must be my prince." And he's like, "I'm no prince. What do you think about this?" And it's just wonderful to see how again that she comes in and the friendships blossom again. So for me, a lot of it is about connection and who we form those really deep connections with, and the fact that they may not be the people that you necessarily expect them to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is. You've summed it up perfectly, I think, because it plays with the familiar tropes of a fairy tale story, like the prince rescuing the princess from the castle and all these characters, but completely flips it upside down. And I think, yeah, for me, what makes this film so memorable is the characters, but also the voice work of the actors. Eddie Murphy as Donkey, like just absolutely superb. Like the fast trash talking that he's so good at, and like the Cameron Diaz, the smart witted kind of characters she usually plays. And then Mike Myers, who had come off of Austin Powers and nails the Scottish accent, because his parents, if not both, but I know his dad was Scottish, and he'd portrayed Scottish characters before. I don't know if you've seen So I Married an Axe Murderer. Have you ever seen that film?
No, I haven't. No.
That's worth a watch. Yeah, so he did that film in between the first two Wayne's World movies, I think, where he plays this poet in San Francisco, who meets this woman who he thinks is an axe murderer. And he also plays his dad in that film, who's this like loudmouth Scottish man who's always yelling, and he's hilarious in it. So yeah, I think the voice work in it is really great. And another interesting fact I just read about before we chatted with Shrek is that the voice of Shrek originally was meant to be played by Chris Farley, who used to be on Saturday Night Live years and years ago and did a few movies. And I think he started recording it, and then he died quite young, 34, 35 years old. Then Mike Myers came in, and he's like, "All right, I'll do this for my friend Chris," because they were friends from SNL. And Mike Myers started doing the voice in his own voice, his Canadian accent. And they're listening to it, and he's like, "No, this isn't right." He goes, "Let me try a Scottish accent." And then he did it with the Scottish accent, and the filmmakers were just like, "That's Shrek, that's perfect." And that's how Shrek got the Scottish accent, But I think it's brilliant,
Wow.
because he's this grumpy green ogre, and he's like, and I can say this because I've got Scottish parents, Scottish relatives, they've got that kind of attitude about him, it's like, "Go away, get out of my face, what you do," like
That's
that.
very good.
Thank you, thanks. I've been practicing, But yeah, I think it was perfect. He had the Scottish accent. It just nailed it. That's what I love about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what, just building on that, for me, the soundtrack is also huge
Oh,
as
so
part of
good.
that film. And it's funny, my musical tastes are what they are, and not normally those kind of songs, but that soundtrack, every single song I absolutely love. And like, I'm a believer, bad reputation, that's not the kind of song I would often listen to, but I just loved it because it was edgy and it was actually, I kind of vibe with that song. And I do love the version of Alleluia in it as well. They're so,
Yeah,
the songs
beautiful.
are so different and they really evoke different emotions. And the funny thing is, I don't tend to watch films all that often. So I don't know how often I've seen Shrek, maybe 3 or 4 times. But what I have done is listen to that soundtrack. It's my hobbies and my go-to feel good. I don't know if we're driving on holiday or something, that is the soundtrack we listen to. And of course, that then evokes the film. And so we're constantly referring to themes from the film, even though we've maybe only watched it a handful of times. So, yeah, love it.
It's so good. It's like, just talking about it makes me want to go back and rewatch it. I know it's been several years. I think I showed it to one of my daughters years ago, and they were kind of like, "Yeah, okay." That didn't quite strike a chord with them. But I think it came out at the time, obviously, animated films like Toy Story, which was really smart at appealing to kids and adults at the same time, created this kind of like formula, and Shrek sort of took that to the next level. And then from then it really opened up, and you had all these different companies and animated films. So yeah, it was a real trailblazer, and Shrek 2, 3, 4, like, have you seen the sequels? Like, any thoughts
Yes,
on them?
and I think they're really good. I mean, I always feel like they're never quite as good as the first one because you don't have that same not knowing what the formula is thing going on, but they are good. They're not a disaster like some sequels are. And I've watched them all, and I've loved them all. I'm pretty sure there's a Christmas special as well, and I watched that too. So, yeah, for me, it makes me smile. It makes me think of positive things, and yeah, good connections and great people. So I love
Absolutely.
it.
And there may even be a Shrek 5 in the works. I've been sort of reading online, because Cameron Diaz has come out of retirement from acting. She's got a movie coming onto Netflix soon, so I think they're going to try and coax her to come back to it. Eddie Murphy as well, he's kind of had this career resurgence, and he's got another Beverly Hills Cop movie coming out. And I think Mike Myers probably needs the work, to be fair. So
he hasn't done much recently. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they bring a Shrek 5 in at some point. But and just a quick, any other honourable mentions for animated films other than Shrek that you like?
Oh, I love a whole bunch of them. Interestingly, it's not an animation that comes to my mind. You're maybe going to laugh when I say this. The other film that comes to my mind is Guardians of the Galaxy, which, and the reason I love it is, again, it's the friendship group. It's the, you know, they are radically different people and they've been flung together.
Yeah.
But they just, they get, oh, and there's something about that for me. Because I'm introverted, I don't need to have like 3 million friends. And I actually don't really want to, but I want to have those really, really good connections. So I think maybe there's something for that about that for me in all of those.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. Yeah, the kind of the unlikely heroes who just somehow end up together and have to work together and, you know, get on each other's nerves, but still find a way to be friends. Yeah, they're great films as well. Absolutely. Fantastic. All right. Well, good chat about Shrek. We might move to the next movie, if that's all right, Alexandra. And this is a real change of pace now. This is the film that has changed your perspective, and really keen to hear how it's changed your perspective. You know, it's a film that deals with mental health, I guess, first and foremostly. It's an Oscar winner. It's a very well-known film, but I'll let you tell us what it is and what it's all about.
Yeah, so the film that changed my perspective is A Beautiful Mind.
I need to believe that something extraordinary is possible.
Universal Pictures, DreamWorks Pictures, and Imagine Entertainment present...
You have to help me.
One man's journey to the greatest discovery of all.
You don't know what's real. This is real.
Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, Academy Award nominee Ed Harris, and Jennifer Connelly.
Perhaps it is good to have a beautiful mind, but an even greater gift is to discover a beautiful heart.
A Beautiful Mind.
Why did it change my perspective? Well, it's a story about a mathematician called John Nash. And don't turn off, because it's about a mathematician. Don't worry, that's not the main theme. But he was, it's based on a true story. And I think that always, when it comes to stories of triumphing over adversity, which is effectively what this is, it always makes it more powerful for me if it's true. Because, you know, we can all write a story about how someone triumphed, but we don't necessarily know if it happened. This, you know, this was based on a real story. And John Nash was an incredibly gifted mathematician. And by the age of 30, he had done all this incredible stuff. A lot of things about human behavior and rivalry, you know, do you compete or do you cooperate? That kind of stuff translated into mathematical language. And he had this huge, bright future ahead of him. But basically, at the age of about 30, his mental health just basically fell off a cliff, and he developed schizophrenia. And I think the film is incredibly powerful at kind of showing us what schizophrenia is like. And I think there's a misconception that it's about multiple personalities, whereas actually it's more about delusions and voices and that kind of thing.
Paranoia and sort of thing.
And so basically he begins to think that the US government is asking him to find codes in newspapers, and he begins to, you know, in reality, I think it was hearing voices. In the film, they showed it as people that he was seeing, obviously, because it's a bit easier to show that and in a film. I do think the film was really good at portraying it in a way that we could connect with, you know, and they had to figure out how to do that to make it accessible, I think. So basically, John Nash, his whole life kind of falls apart in front of him, because people figure out that things aren't going quite right anymore, and he ends up being hospitalized and having all sorts of different treatments. But basically the gist of the story is he sits down with his wife and he says, because it's not like he's not connected with reality all the time. It comes in fits and spurts. And he sits down with his wife and basically says, I do not want to have to go back to hospital. And I want to find a way, and I want to figure this out. And it's not straightforward at all. But what the film portrays is that he eventually gets to the point where he knows the delusions are there. And in the film, that's, you know, he still sees these imaginary people. But he recognizes that they're not real, and therefore he can take choices to ignore them. Mm-hmm. And it's a very long process, and it involves his wife being caring to him. It involves his university, for example, just giving him the space to sit around somewhere and be a bit weird, if we're being honest, to like do his research in a slightly odd way, but they give him a safe space. And eventually over time, he, as I say, he manages to go, okay, I still see that stuff, but I'm just going to ignore it. Yeah. And so at the end, and this is all true, he is given the Nobel Prize in economics in 1994. Yeah. So he's given it, I think, in his 70s for work that he did in his 20s.
Yeah.
But they wanted, because basically the work he did it with one idea in mind, but it ended up being used for so many different applications in the time that he was unwell.
Yeah.
And so he was, you know, he was honored for that. And he was at that point, you know, he was recovered enough that he was able to receive that award.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, that is the guts of it. It is just a very inspiring story.
It really is. Yeah. And it's, I mean, obviously it's carried by the incredible performance of Russell Crowe in the lead role, who's just one of my favorite actors as well. And this film is in my top 10. It's just, I think it's just a brilliant film. And it was one of the first DVDs I bought when DVDs were just sort of coming out in Australia in the early 2000s. Nice to watch it and listen to the director's commentary, directed by Ron Howard, and listen to, and it's really insightful listening to how he talks about schizophrenia, how he talks about genius and all of this stuff. And it's such a deep film. There's so much different things that you can kind of pull out of it and all of that. And sadly, like after a very long life and coming through all of that, John and Alicia Nash were killed in a car accident about 4 or 5 years ago. Terrible.
Coming back from some kind of award ceremony.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing was, I know it was.
Yeah.
And yet.
It's just really sad, yet, you know, to come all that way and die in those circumstances. Yeah. Yeah, that was a very upsetting news to hear.
It is. The really interesting thing, the film had to, and I think Ron Howard and the others involved admitted this, you know, just said they had to simplify the story a bit, and they had to kind of compress things. Because, I mean, if you told the whole story, we would all be here for about 5 hours. In fact, I've got the biography that it's based on, and it is hundreds of pages long. I mean, it's a very long read.
Yeah.
But one of the things they simplified slightly was that actually John Nash and his wife Alicia actually divorced, and that is not really portrayed in the film in quite that way. I mean, obviously difficulties are shown, but the reality is they divorced. He went to live with his mother for a while. But then she died, and Alicia realized, oh, John has nowhere else to go. No one else is going to take him, basically, and give him the space that he needs. And so she ended up taking him back as a lodger. Yeah. So completely different relationship.
Right.
But then the beautiful part of it, and again, in a way, the true story is even more beautiful than the film, because is that they got remarried in 2001. So they went through this really complicated journey together, but at the end of it, Alicia was just really, really, you know, close to him and faithful to him, saw what he needed, and kind of accepted in some way a responsibility for looking after him, which is, and yes, it was very tragic how they died, but they did have, what, over a decade together again, and him doing his work and doing, so it was a mixed story, but I'm glad they got back together.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And I guess that's the thing with movies, is that it's, you know, they have to, there's certain rules within a movie. I guess they kind of wanted to work the love story element into it and showing them sort of coming up. But it didn't completely ignore everything, because obviously she was, you know, ready to leave him. He was so delusional. The child safety was at risk, all of this stuff. And I think just the way that that's captured is just so, so well done. And I guess as a film that changed your perspective, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like what did it change for you? And, you know, have you seen things differently after this film?
Yeah. So I think for me, the big thing was realizing that we have agency in our own lives, as in there are choices that we can make. And for a long time, so there's a concept of learned helplessness, and particularly if stuff happens, and for me it was when I was a kid, you know, my father would go into these angry moods, whatever, all sorts of different behavior that he used to do. My way of dealing with that was to try to be perfect, which obviously it doesn't work. You can try as much as you can, but it doesn't work. And so I got to the point where I was like, nothing I do works. he does what he does anyway. What's the point in me trying? And then when I became a young adult, I developed just a bit of a plethora of mental health issues. So I had two different forms of OCD, had chronic insomnia, actually had post-traumatic stress disorder from another thing that had happened to me when I was in hospital. I just had all this stuff to deal with, chronic anxiety. And I was seeing a counsellor who was very, very good to me over a number of years. And I remember she would say to me, Alexandra, you can't control what happens to you, but you can control your response. And you know what? It used to really hack me off. She didn't say much that annoyed me, but this point really annoyed me. And I would say to her, but hang on a minute. I didn't ask for any of this horrible stuff to be done to me and to land up in this place. Why should I be the one to like take the high road and react better? And
exactly.
Yeah. But over time, I couldn't help but see the logic of it, which is, you know, life is full of difficult stuff and we all have our different difficult stuff to deal with. But at the end of the day, the only thing we have control over is how we respond. Mm. And that can make the difference between, I don't know, feeling pain and then being in great suffering. And it's this is never a judgment. This is never saying, oh my goodness, you know, you didn't respond correctly and therefore you're a bad person. That's never like that, but it's about the growth and, you know, what can we do? So for me, that was a really massive bit. And just taking a bit of ownership, I suppose. And there's a bit in the film, and you just alluded to it, where Alicia is about to leave in the car after a particularly difficult incident. And John Nash comes to the front of the car and basically stops her leaving. He puts his hands on the bonnet and he says, she can't be real because she never ages. That's and it's right. about one of the imaginary characters that he sees as a young girl. And he has suddenly clocked that over however many years, she is still 8 years old.
She's never grown up.
And it was just that actually, so he then makes a choice, mm-hmm. even though it's incredibly compulsive to listen to those voices. Yep. He decides not to because he wants what's real, and it makes me cry every time I watch it. That film, because it's just the sheer power of going, I am going to figure out what I can do here, and it's not going to be perfect.
Yep,
but I'm going to make it the best it can be.
Yeah, that's really the whole heart of the movie, isn't it? Yeah, and I think after that scene you just talked about, where he's sitting at the dining table with Alicia and his doctor or his psychologist that was working with him in the Institute, played by Christopher Plummer. He says, you know, I think John Nash says, I'll figure it out. All I have to do is apply my mind. And then the doctor says, no, you can't. And then he says, why can't I? And he goes, because your mind is where the problem is in the first place. And they just want to put him on tons of medication and reintroduce the electric shock therapy and all that. But obviously that's making him like, you know, almost like, you know, in this kind of coma, waking coma all the time. It's affecting their relationship and all of this sort of stuff. So he pushes through without the medication, without the treatment. And yeah, like you described before, he goes years and years and years where he has good days with seeing these characters and other days where he just acknowledges them. And he's like, okay, yeah, I see you, but I'm not going to engage with you. And there's a scene at the end where the three characters he keeps seeing, the girl, his best friend, and the DOD agent, played by Ed Harris, the three of them are walking together, looking at him like, please give us your attention. You know, that. So they've connected because he's not giving them attention, you know? And I thought, like, wow, like, even these delusional, imaginary characters he's seeing have feelings, you know? And I thought, all these little touches like that in the movie just make it so unique, you know? And it's an incredible film, it really is.
It is. And you touched on one thing there that I think when I read about the reality versus the film, I think the thing about pushing through without meds was maybe slightly different in reality. But I think the key thing I thought about was, it's not bad to be on medication. Like, there are times where for particular things it's, but you are right in that what it was trying to portray was he decided that he wanted to be in the best state he could be in, and through a mix of different things figured out how to do that, and not necessarily agreeing to all the treatments if he didn't, you know. And I find it's a really complicated area, that is what, you know, there are a range of things that one can do, and what does one decide to go for in terms of treatment and help, etc.
Absolutely, yeah. And it just, the tagline of the film just popped in my head. I don't know where this came from, but I think it's the only thing more powerful, the only thing greater than the power of the mind is the courage of the heart. And I'm like, yeah, that's really true. Because, I mean, this mind is this incredible thing, but obviously there's all the other things that come with that. But like that courage and that bravery to just be like, you know what, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm just going to do it because, you know, I value myself, and he valued his life and the relationship with his wife. He's like, all right, we'll do it together. And I think the fact that she stuck by him through all of that is what pulled him through. I think if John Nash didn't have Alicia, he may not have made it as long as he did. You know?
Yeah. Like, exactly that. And it's interesting what you say there about, I'm a very thinky person, very cerebral. I did maths as a subject, you know, it's all about the logic. But I realized, and I talk about this in my book, I'm not going to think my way out of this. Actually, my OCD is a mind. It's thinking gone a bit awry. And so just trying to out-logic OCD does not work, because I've tried it many times, and it by itself is not enough. And yeah, you're right. Bringing in the heart, bringing in one spirit, it's what ends up making things work. And I think making things possible. One of the things I love about the film is where there are bits of humor. And I just think that being able to deploy humor when things are just really tough. So there's one point where John Nash has a visitor, one of his former colleagues, and the former colleague is a bit nervous about coming to see him. And when he arrives and is about to sit down, John Nash says, "Oh, don't sit on Harvey." And that's there's right. no one there. And this guy's like, "What?" And then he says, "Oh, don't worry, I'm only joking." Yeah, and there was another point with Alicia where it's late at night and she can hear him outside talking to someone. Mm. And of course, immediately she's like, and you know, the music gets a bit nervy and she's like, who's he talking to? Some other imaginary person. And so he comes back in and she's like, who are you talking to? Mm. And he said, oh, just the bin man. And there aren't bins at this time of night, John, you know, and it's all like, oh no, it's all unraveling. And then you hear the bin lorry outside and they have a good laugh about it, because obviously she immediately got scared, but the reality was actually that was all it was.
Yeah, that's it. And I think those two scenes illustrate how you can use humor to get through these a lot of different predicaments in life. If you can find something you can laugh about, because, you know, as smart as he was, there was, you know, times where he couldn't always cope and she couldn't always cope. So it's like, all right, let's try and find the lighter side of it, you know. And I think that can really help people get through it as well. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's for anyone watching this who hasn't seen A Beautiful Mind, you know, it's one of Russell Crowe's best films, I think. Won the Best Picture Oscar. He didn't win the Oscar for acting that year. I think he was beaten by Denzel Washington, which was fine. In Training Day, he was very good. Great film, great soundtrack. The musical score is really beautiful. I quite often listen to the music from the film as well when I'm writing or creating or something, you know, try to tap into some genius that is probably isn't there, but you know, I could dream. But do you have just in wrapping up the Beautiful Mind talk, do you have aside from some of those scenes we've mentioned, is there a particular scene or moment in the film that really stands out for you?
I think it has to be right at the end where he's coming out after having taught a class at university, some kind of class, and this old guy he's never met before is coming towards him and wants to say hello, and he grabs one of the students who's just coming out of the lecture and just says, can I just check, is he real? And she goes, yeah, he's there, don't worry. And he just says, I'm just a bit wary, thank you for helping out. I just loved it. It was just a sign of, I'm always going to have this thing, but now I know how to deal with it, and I can get people to help me, and I can therefore live my life in a better way. I just it makes me cry every time.
It's a nice little touch, isn't it? Fantastic. Great movie. Awesome. All right, so we've got one more film to talk about, Alexandra, and we're kind of going back to comedy here, something kind of lighthearted. It does sort of look at, you know, life and life choices and consequences, and it's kind of a bit deeper than it looks at face value. Anyway, you tell us, what's this movie called, and why should everybody see it?
Yeah, so my final film that I think everyone should see once in their lifetime, it's called Click, and the lead actor is Adam Sandler.
Yeah,
and
great film.
This thing's broken. He's fast-forwarding on its own.
I missed the whole Dragon Tales era. Adam Sandler.
Oh, what's this?
Let's slow things down for a better look. I know it
could. Click.
Playing some catch?
Actually, we're playing some drop, because Ben hasn't caught one yet.
You gotta keep your eye on the ball, kid.
I think the first thing I would say is it is not your average Adam Sandler film, and I don't kind of tend to, that's the kind of comedy I don't tend to watch, to be honest. You know, different kinds of comedy, nothing wrong with it, just not my particular taste. But I can't remember why I watched this film. I never remember when I've watched films or why I watched them, but you're right, it's comedy, but it's got a deeper kind of undercurrent to it, and it's all about how much control we have over our lives and how much control we would ideally like to have over our lives, and what impact that might have if we did have more control. So the reason that's a big theme for me is with OCD, it's a lot of it is about control. You're trying to control, or in my case anyway, I'm trying to control my environment to make it safe, to make everything happy, and to avoid bad things happening. That's quite a lot of what I'm trying to do. But I've realized over time I can't do that. And actually the very act of trying to control things screws them up and has unintended consequences. So that's kind of why it speaks to me. So basically the main character is an architect called Michael Newman, who, like many people, he's got a family to support and he's trying to get ahead in his career. He's trying to make partner at his firm, but he's really struggling with juggling everything. And so he's constantly getting a bit overstressed. And one of the things he gets stressed by seems a bit trivial, but basically there are all these remote controls for all the different gizmos and et cetera in the house, and he cannot figure out which one operates the TV. And eventually he gets so annoyed by it that he goes to this shop and decides he's going to find a universal remote. But he lands up kind of in a shady part of the store, and frankly, I think he should have realised something odd was going on at this point, because it definitely did not look like a normal store. But anyway, he meets this guy called Morty, who says, "Oh, I've got what you need." And very much in passing says, "It's non-returnable," and then gives him this remote. And basically what he discovers is, over time, by accident, he discovers that this remote can do things he would never have imagined. So if the dog's barking too loudly, he can just press mute. And all of a sudden he's not hearing the dog anymore. That's awesome. He discovers that if he can just pause everything, if he needs a moment to think, how am I going to respond? He can just pause it. And one that I particularly love, there's this moment where his wife says, "Oh, you must remember the song that was playing when we first kissed." And he's sitting there going, "I don't remember."
No.
He presses pause and he's able to skip back to that scene in his life. Hear the song, come back, go, I remember. And I was just thinking, I want that, because the things that's I cool. don't remember that I wish I did, that would be amazing. So he discovers, you know, he discovers this, and then the crux of it, and I'll shut up for a second, but the crux of it is he discovers that he can fast forward things that he doesn't like. And that is a game changer. You know, he's sitting in a queue of cars, a traffic jam, and suddenly he presses fast forward and he's got to the end of his journey and he didn't have to endure the traffic jam, and on it goes, and it's and it seems like a really good thing, but then it turns into a perhaps less good thing over time. But
because he starts relying on it too much, and it actually it actually skips over all these important milestones. And it's a really clever film. And I have to ask you first, before we go into it anymore, if you had a remote for your life and you could rewind, pause, or fast forward, but you could only choose one of them to use, which one would it be?
You see, this is a really hard thing. I would have said to you in the past that I would love to fast forward stuff. So, for example, when I was 15, I was hospitalized and it wasn't a particularly nice experience and it went on forever. And whenever anyone says to me, "Oh, my life is going too fast," and I feel like saying to them, actually, be thankful that your life is going quite fast, because if you're lying in hospital and you're unwell and nobody knows what's wrong with you, time goes so slowly. You have no one to talk to. It was honestly, it was just not a great time. And I, you know, there weren't many nurses around to chat to me because it was very busy. And so I just remember time was so slow. So I would have definitely pressed fast forward on that. The whole bunch of stuff from my life, given what's happened to me, that I would have pressed fast forward on. However, I would have then missed out on the things that make me. And I at the end of the day, I come to this conclusion that we're either all in life or we're not. So I think overall, I would say no to the fast forward. I think the one that I would actually pick now would be the ability to go back and see things that have happened in the past again, because our memories are not as reliable as we wish they were. There are things that I wish I remembered that I don't. So that's the one I would choose now, hands down.
Yeah, I thought about this myself. I think I'd probably go a little bit different and say I'd like to be able to pause, you know, and like be able to continue what I'm doing, but just pause everything else. Because like I try to do so much within a day, like it's almost like living three lives at the same time. So if I could just pause, I could come and like read or write or watch a movie for a few hours uninterrupted. Especially when my kids are really young, and like the second I get settled, that's when I hear dad, I'm like, oh. I'm like, coming, you know, and then the moment's gone, right? But that's fine, because that's parenthood, you know, it's all good. But yeah, it does make you think, which one would you choose in which circumstance? Yeah. And he has a bit of fun with it, like he mutes his mother-in-law, I think, and there's this really attractive woman running past. He makes her go in slow motion so he can see everything moving and all that stuff. But the interesting part is when he starts to fast forward, and he goes forward years and years and years, and it's like he was there, like the Morty character says, you were there, but you were like this zombie. And everyone was saying, you just weren't present. You weren't present. And you see him sitting at the dinner table eating, and like he's this zombie. Mm. And I thought it was a really clever twist on, like, we can kind of sometimes live our life that way on autopilot.
Yeah.
And we can miss what's there because we're always thinking about the next big thing or the future, or, you know, waiting for something to come up which we think is going to be better or good. But we don't always notice what's going on right now, you know? So, like, the importance of kind of living in the moment, I think it captured that in a kind of a funny, creative way without being too preachy, which is why I think it makes it such a smart movie and not your typical Adam Sandler film, because he usually plays like the goofballs and all that. And occasionally he does this kind of film where he played like a married guy with kids and a working man. And he did a really good job, I thought.
I think that's absolutely right. And that I think one of his pivotal moments was when he thought he'd got his promotion, but then his boss, as bosses sometimes do, turned around and said, "Oh, that's not quite what I meant. I actually need you to complete this extra project before you get your promotion." And he's devastated because he realizes that's going to take a few months of hard work. And so he just says, "I'm going to press fast forward because I don't want to live through that." But the reality is, he then lands up, of course, he's got to his promotion drinks and that's great, but then he realizes over a year has gone by because it took longer because of what his boss is like. And it makes you think about the fact, okay, there may be this difficult thing I'm having to do, but it doesn't mean there isn't good stuff as well, as you say, like your relationships with your family and friends and all that kind of stuff. And he suddenly realized he'd missed out on a whole year of life, basically, because he didn't want to live through that one thing. And I think it really does make one think, like I say, you're either all in or you're not. And that we don't get to pick and choose. And that it's quite powerful to think about that.
Absolutely. And I think it really reinforces the importance of, you know, it's about the journey, not always the destination. Or the thing that we think we want so much, and we like, it'd be great to like just rush through, but then, you know, you could be missing something really great along the way. Even if at the time it feels like, oh, this conversation is going to be a hassle, or this, you know, this family dinner, I don't really want to go, you know, we kind of have these thoughts sometimes, but then when we're there, like really it's, you know, we can find something about it to enjoy and appreciate. It's a great idea, like to be able to imagine, what if I had a remote? Cause it'd be very tempting to do all of that, wouldn't it? To be able to pause, rewind, mute certain people, you know, it would be great to be able to do that from time to time. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. How about in your own life? Like, I guess currently in some of your day-to-day stuff, is there anything you'd like to have that remote for that would make things a bit easier for you?
Like, I think, a time so consuming I'm in,
task or something? Yeah.
I think I still sometimes wish for the destination, right? Yeah. And so I'm setting up my new business and I'm going through that process of doing that. And you just have to be incredibly comfortable with not knowing. You know, with uncertainty, with not knowing how it's going to work out and exactly what you're going to end up doing and how. And just, I am not good with uncertainty historically anyway. And so it's quite funny that I find myself here. And there are times where I would just love to fast forward to the point where the business is completely up and running. Everything is, you know, I would love to do that. And and yet I sit here and think to myself, but as you say, it's in the journey. I, you know, I do lovely hill walks with my husband and I'm learning while I'm setting up this business. And if I was not here, I wouldn't be learning that properly. So yeah, I do. I agree with you as well about pausing. There are just times where life is incredibly fast and probably the biggest gift we would have is just to have a few extra minutes to go, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But equally, I think we can learn how to do that even without our wonderful remote. Like there are ways of just slowing ourselves down and, you know, I'm in a difficult situation, but I'm not going to let myself spiral. I'm going to calm myself down and then figure out what's the best response here. It comes back to the response again, doesn't it? You know, how am I going to react to what's happening around me and make it the best it can be. So.
For sure. Yeah. And without us sort of giving away the ending for anyone who hasn't seen this, I guess he learns his lesson and he kind of gets a chance to just do things over again. And he's like, now I get what life's all about. So it has a really kind of nice message to it. And being an Adam Sandler film, I mean, it's got some of his trademark humor and it's, you know, but it's not like you're really in your face kind of Adam Sandler stuff, you know, it's kind of more appealing to everybody. And I think, yeah, everyone can relate to that, to being able to want to control their life and be able to have some more choice, I guess, because like life is just this freight train that never stops, right? We've just got to jump on, hang on and figure it out as we go, right? There's no perfect plan. And, you know, we've got to put in the work, we've got to put in the time and the years. And, you know, myself with my writing, and I'm sure you discovered this with your book as well, that it'd be great to fast forward and be like, hey, here's my book. But no, we have to sit down and write it. We can't use AI to write our books because, you know, that's not writing. It might help you keep your chapter titles or something. That's fine. But, you know, we've got to put the work in, don't we? So that's kind of the other message of the story as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting. One of the titles I give myself is musician, and it's because I write songs. And I wrote a musical when I was at university and I always thought I'd write another one and it just never quite happened. And I used to set myself these deadlines. I'd be like, by the time I'm 30, I have to have written the musical. 30 comes and goes, I haven't done it. 35 comes and goes. 40 like came that. And went. But what I realized it was all tied up with my journey and the healing I was needing to do. And so I had some actually quite understandable blocks because of that. And yet I've written these songs over the years that I now realize, looking back, are about my story. So I can use them in my work now to illustrate different aspects. One of the key things, right, is when you're a creative of some kind, you actually just have to sit your bum down in the chair and do it, even if you don't feel like it. And it's really hard. I feel this resistance and I can't explain to you why, because I know I love my songs when I write them. And anyway, I managed to yesterday. I sat down and I was like, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I wrote a song and I was really pleased with it. And so yes, you're right. You just have to do the work sometimes. Part.
You got to show up. Yeah. You got to be there because no one's going to do it for you. No one's going to hand your success to you on a silver platter. And if you haven't done it yourself, you haven't really earned it. It's not as satisfying as like sort of taking the shortcut in life. So, I mean, yeah, I've tried to take shortcuts before and it never works. You know, you end up with egg on your face. So I think you got to put in the hard yards and which he learns to do in this film as well. So yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Well, three really great films, Alexandra, and I think we've covered lots of different topics here, you know, about storytelling techniques, mental health, pausing and rewinding life, you know, so we've covered it all today, which has been great. And just in wrapping up, I know it's hard to narrow your list down to three films. What were some of the other films you were thinking of, or any other honorable mentions of movies that you really enjoy?
Yeah, so I think Avatar was right up there for me. I know it's one of those films that polarizes people a bit. For me, it's just beautiful. I just think it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And also the message about our environment is one that really resonates. I think people struggle with it because humanity are the bad guys in the film. And I think people probably struggle with that a little bit. And I get that. But the beauty of it was probably the biggest stunning thing for me. And I also say The Matrix is another one. Definitely that's one where the sequels are not for me, but The Matrix as a film was one of the ones that was very formative, I think, for me. And
absolutely,
again, kind of transcending your limits and that kind of theme. So that resonated as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and we've had Avatar featured on the show. We haven't had the Matrix featured yet. So anyone watching, hit me up. I'd love to talk Matrix with you. I think we could spend the whole episode on just that one film alone. So we'll have to work. Yeah. We'll have to work something out. But yeah, anyway. Excellent. And just, I'd like to pick your brain a little bit with this next question. What would you like to see more of in the movies? You know, is there a particular, culture or life experience or part of the human condition that you'd love to see kind of explored in movies a little bit more? Or has it been explored already, but could it have been done better or should it be done more often? Yeah, just sort of what would you like to see in the films more of in the movies?
My goodness, that is quite a doozy of a question at the end of a chat. I think we all, well, maybe not all of us. I love a happy ending. I think a lot of people love a happy ending. I think part of what is on my mind quite a lot at the minute is about all the challenges that we have as humanity in front of us at the minute and in a range of different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing which keeps going through my head is the happy ending is not assured at this point. You know, we've got a lot to do. Now, obviously, you then have films that get into the kind of dystopian, you know, we've destroyed ourselves and here's what happens next kind of thing. I think for me, there's something about the real nitty gritty of how are we as a wonderful but also quite flawed species going to figure out how to make this work and make it work in a way that is good for everyone and we can all live. You know, I know that's very deep, but I think there's something about exploring ourselves. And I mean, it's very interesting when I talked about Shrek at the beginning and I identified with the parts of characters that I liked, but you know, there are also parts of characters we can identify with that we don't like so much, but we know that's part of us as well. So there's something about honesty around that, but also hope, like how are we genuinely going to do this and how can we all work together to make that happen?
Yeah, fantastic. That's a great answer. I think, yeah, like, you know, movies are certainly changing and I think people are craving for more kind of original content. And I think we're looking more for movies that put humanity and people under the microscope a little bit more. Mm. You know, I think the superhero thing has run its course. It's like, okay, we don't, how many different heroes do we need to see, right? But like, you know, movies like last year with Oppenheimer, which was a huge hit, and I think it's about to clean up at the Oscars next week at the time of this recording. It's in a week from now. That was just a character study, you know, and it did really well because people were like, I want to understand what was going on in the mind of the guy who created the atomic bomb, you know, fascinating kind of stuff. And he wasn't necessarily a likable guy. Like you could say he changed the world for the worst, you know, but he was a human. He was a man. He had children. He was just trying to do the right thing. So that really resonated with people, you know, and I think more films like that are needed. I think what you've talked about sort of touches on that. We need to take a closer look at ourselves and certain things that have been allowed to happen in the world and how we've responded to them have really shown a light on humanity and what we think of ourselves versus what we actually do. There's been a big contrast there, you know, and certain public figures have kind of shown a light on that as well without naming any names, but you probably know who I'm talking about. But yeah, you know, we need to have more films like that. So I totally agree with you. I think that would be fascinating. And there's so much unexplored stuff there that, you know, all the screenwriters who are watching this, probably not, but you know, if you're watching this, there you go. We've given you your assignment, get cracking, right?
We have.
Maybe you and I can collaborate. You know, you've written musicals, I've written stories. Maybe we can come up with something. We'll work on a project.
Maybe we can. That would be brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, Alexandra, well, we could talk all day. You know, we've only just scratched the surface of these three films and your knowledge and experience. And it's been great. Thank you for being on My Movie Story and sharing your story with us so bravely and graciously. And you know, people can check out your book. Do you have a website or anything like that people could have a look at? You'd like them to send, we could send them to?
Yeah, just go to damselnotindistress.co.uk and you'll find all my stuff there. So
beautiful. We'll do that. We'll share the link on the screen and in the show notes. So yeah, thanks again. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your day. And it's nighttime here, so I'll be retiring soon. But you have a good rest of your day. And thanks for being on the podcast.
Will do. And thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.